This presentation dramatizes the experience of a fictional participant in a low-vision rehabilitation program. The intent is to introduce you to as many of the types of tests and interventions as possible. For simplicity, a single character, Jim, has been used to show many possible approaches. It doesn't, therefore, necessarily represent a typical case. Since individual programs will be geared to each person's unique capabilities and goals, evaluation and training may be expected to include some, but not all, of the options discussed here.
I noticed it after my last class on a Friday. I was writing Monday's assignment on the board, and I'd gotten some chalk in my right eye. I closed it for a second, and I couldn't see the letters I'd just written. I actually thought I'd accidentally erased them. That's what it looked like, just like I'd smudged them out with my hand or something. Then I opened my eye, and the letters were there again. I don't know why I hadn't noticed it before. I couldn't blink the spot away or rub it away or anything. It was just there. I was supposed to attend a teacher's meeting that afternoon, but I didn't go. I just left. I had to find out what was going on. So I went straight home, called my optometrist. He made time for me that afternoon. And to make a long story short, I knew in a few hours that I had an eye disease I'd never heard of and couldn't even pronounce. It was called macular degeneration. And I was off on a trip that I didn't want to take.
An estimated 14 million Americans are vision impaired, but only about 120,000 are classified as totally blind. This means that a very large percentage of those millions can benefit from low vision rehabilitation. With the population growing older and living longer, the total number of vision impaired people is dramatically increasing. This is serious, not only on a personal level, but for society as a whole. Each year, the vision-impaired community costs the United States more than $22 billion in education expenses, income loss, services, and government disability programs. An obvious solution to the problem would be a cure for retinal disease coupled with ways to restore lost sight. These developments will be a reality in the not-too-distant future, but until then, the most effective approach has proven to be education and training for the vision-impaired through good rehabilitation programs. Vision impairment is generally any interference with sight that hinders the performance of daily activities. More specifically, vision impairment is a term which describes varying degrees of vision loss caused by disease, trauma, or a congenital disorder. It may appear as one or more of six general conditions. Blurriness, where visual acuity with best spectacle correction is still reduced or blurred. Narrowing of peripheral or side vision. Defects within the field of vision, such as distortion or blind spots. Loss of contrast. Sensitivity to glare or light. And loss of color perception. The term vision impaired should not be confused with the term legally blind. Legal blindness is defined as acuity of 20/200 or worse in the better eye with correction, or a visual field of 20 degrees or less in the better eye. A person who meets one of these criteria might still have usable vision, but she would not be able to read without training on an assistive device. Also, she would not be able to meet the requirements for obtaining a driver's license. This person would be described as vision impaired, but another person who is vision impaired may not necessarily be legally blind. Strategies for individuals with total blindness must be non-visual. Many times, vision impaired individuals will also benefit from non-visual solutions for improved accuracy and efficiency with a variety of tasks. With diseases that affect the peripheral or side field, mobility is more seriously affected. Glaucoma, retinitis pigmentosa, and stroke, for example, can constrict the visual field to as little as 10 to 15 degrees. Even with this severe limitation, however, rehabilitation can successfully reinforce the individual with training in the use of low vision devices. Low vision rehabilitation is like physical therapy for someone who has lost a limb. Its purpose is to develop strategies to maximize or substitute for diminished sight in order to maintain independence and a sense of self-worth. This rebuilding and reinforcement of the visual foundation is accomplished through identification of goals, introduction to assistive devices, and training. Rehabilitation is not just an introduction to low vision devices. Actually, that may not occur until sometime into the program after the patient has gone through evaluation and training. Only then can appropriate recommendations for low vision devices be made. Depending upon the patient's needs, a good program might also provide education, support groups, and individual counseling. It would help the patient to realize that using such devices and techniques is a sign of tenacity and courage, not weakness or defeat. People with a constricted visual field might expect to be introduced to scanning therapy and devices such as visual field awareness prisms and reverse telescopes. People with severe vision loss should expect to receive orientation and mobility training, information about animal guides, and occupational therapy. In addition to these skills, vision specialists teach how to manage daily activities such as adapting the home for safety and navigation, improving lighting conditions, preparing meals, labeling medications, clothing, and appliances, writing, keeping financial records, personal grooming, using magnifiers for easier reading, and systematizing shopping and payment at the register. There are some very good reasons for low vision rehabilitation training, the most important being increased physical and psychological health. Research has shown that people with low vision tend to have more emotional difficulties and a higher risk of accidents than normally sighted individuals. Patients who have undergone rehabilitation, however, have reported significant improvements in their functional abilities, a high rate of continued use of low vision devices, improvement in reading and distance vision, and a general satisfaction with the quality of life.
When my right eye went bad, I couldn't read, I couldn't drive, I couldn't work in my wood shop, and that bothered me a lot. I thought I was going totally blind. I became very depressed, and pretty much decided that life as I had known it was pretty much over. There was more stress at home. The family couldn't accept the fact that I couldn't see well, and I just couldn't help out. Couldn't do the carpentry, couldn't help my kids with building their houses. My wife, Marie, was very understanding, but it was difficult for her. I tried to continue teaching. The students and staff were very supportive in the beginning, but they seemed to forget after a while. Writing lesson plans and grading papers was difficult. I particularly had problems with reading textbooks and journals.
The first step in the rehabilitation process is working one-on-one with a counselor or specialist who will assess your needs and identify which programs are best suited to meet them.
My ophthalmologist referred me to an eye clinic for evaluation. After my appointment was scheduled, a low vision therapist called me and asked me questions about my health, eye condition, and what she called my visual goals, the things I wanted to do but couldn't because of my impairment. Then when Marie and I went to the clinic, the therapist talked with us about the problems I had that were caused by my poor vision. And she explained how I could make the best use of my remaining sight through training, low vision devices, and services. She said that together she, the low vision team, and I would lay out a rehabilitation plan to help me meet my goals, and that my doctors would get reports as we went along. She told me that the program could take several visits over a few weeks, and that I would have to really want to succeed for it to work. Well, I did want to succeed, not just for myself, but for Marie and the kids. So I said, go for it.
Jim's initial visit was not what he expected. Rather than the kind of eye exam he had received from his medical eye doctor, the therapist put him through a battery of questions and tests to determine his functional needs, his visual capabilities and limitations, and any history of health problems and related treatment requirements that might affect his visual recovery. Together, they developed a complete case history to determine how he was functioning and what his needs might be. This included an analysis of his reading habits and other near-vision activities, use of low-vision devices, and incidents of eye strain or fatigue.
I thought the questions would never end, but I knew how important they were. The rehab therapist didn't leave any stone unturned, that's for sure. I think by the time she was through, she probably knew more about me than my own wife. And after 36 years of marriage, that's saying a lot.
After analyzing the results of Jim's initial evaluation, the vision team agreed that he was a good candidate for success through rehabilitation, and they began to devise a plan to fit his needs and goals. The next step was to assess Jim's visual functions through tests and techniques which were adapted to fit his visual impairment. His visual acuity and refractive status were tested using special low-vision refractive techniques. These tests made use of larger-than-usual testing charts, control of illumination, the use of trial frame refraction, and techniques that allow for eccentric or off-center viewing. The tester also used an Amsler grid, a simple way to identify defects in Jim's central visual field. He used a contrast sensitivity test to determine Jim's ability to discriminate subtle changes in vision that occur in the real world, rather than the absolute black-on-white contrast of visual acuity charts. He used a brightness acuity tester, or BAT, to look at the impact of glare on Jim's retina. And a color vision test for possible functional implications. Jim's ocular motility was also evaluated. This was to determine if he had any problems with impaired eye movement. His visual field was analyzed in order to predict how he might function in day-to-day activities and how well he might respond to various rehabilitative approaches. Four types of visual field tests are available for this purpose. The tangent screen test, a confrontations test, wherein the doctor introduces objects such as fingers or lights from the side to see if there are any large field defects like loss of side vision to one side due to stroke. This test is not sensitive to small or slight changes in the vision. A perimeters test presents lights or other targets in various positions. In a manual perimeters test, the doctor controls the target movement and speed and maps out the field loss areas. The fourth test is a computerized perimeters test. This computer program presents a specific pattern of lights and then prints out the results with analysis. Finally, to ensure that there were no other ocular diseases or complications, Jim was given an external eye health evaluation. His eyes were tested for intraocular pressures and also were dilated for an internal examination. Jim's test results confirmed that he had the exudative or wet form of macular degeneration with no other ocular complications. His condition had been first diagnosed as age-related macular degeneration at age 60. At that time, he had large and numerous deposits called drusen beneath the retina of both eyes, and his vision was distorted by the accumulation of this debris. 2 years later, at age 62, hemorrhaging developed in his left eye. It was treated with laser coagulation therapy, which stopped the bleeding but left permanent dark spots in his visual field. His acuity in that eye was measured at 20/200. A few months after that, hemorrhaging occurred in Jim's right eye beneath the fovea, or the very center of the macula. Because of the location of the leaking vessel, it could not be lasered, so scarring from the bleeding left that eye centrally blind. Jim agreed to attend weekly training at the center. He and his rehabilitation therapist established a list of personal visual goals that would give direction to his training. These goals were in the areas of activities of daily living, often called independent living skills, computer use, and counseling. Vocational rehabilitation might have been part of the program, but Jim was fortunately able to retire early with full benefits. If he had needed to remain employed, several psychometric assessments would have been made to evaluate his current skills as they related to his teaching assignment or other areas of interest. Jim's training began with safe cooking strategies, labeling techniques, use of adaptive equipment, and an evaluation of the safety and lighting in his home. Most of the training took place in a supervised program of self-care using a specially designed apartment at the center. With the help of Marie, who handled most of the domestic responsibilities at home, his level of visual functioning was determined to be safe and sufficiently functional to support his daily living activities. Jim was trained and evaluated specifically in every important facet of daily living. If his disease was the type that might lead to severe to total vision loss, he would have practiced while wearing a sleep shade. Fortunately, macular degeneration leaves the peripheral field intact, so this was not necessary.
I relearned everything. Things I've been doing my whole life, I had to learn to do all over again, this time without depending so much on my eyesight. It wasn't easy. I trained twice a week for 6 weeks, and each session lasted for 1 or 2 hours. The therapist showed me how to take care of my clothing and do the laundry in a whole different way. We labeled my clothing and all the appliances in several ways. Sometimes we just used large print, but she also showed me how to use some stuff that left a raised, high contrast line you could feel. I learned how to sew and iron safely, including how to use a needle threader, and she offered some good practical advice like wearing wrinkle-free clothes. I hate to iron, so that was a real good suggestion. We got into personal grooming and hygiene, like brushing my teeth and taking care of my finger and toenails. I never thought how tricky those things could be without good vision. We worked on budgeting, including using a CCTV and a signature template for reading and paying bills. And now I carry a multi-compartment wallet for keeping my money denomination separate. That was a good idea. My therapist had lots of good housekeeping tips, like assigning definite locations for cleaning equipment and tools, using disposable plates and utensils, and all kinds of things like that. She taught me some practical eating skills, too, so I wouldn't embarrass myself or Marie in a restaurant. I never thought I could use my fingers to eat with and still look classic. I learned how to cook without burning the house down or losing a finger. I learned to take along a large print grocery list and a hand magnifier when I go shopping. And one of the most important things she made sure I knew was where our basic medical supplies are and how to identify and use them. The rehab therapist also worked with me in communications using large print and in touch typing. I could never type without looking at the keys, but I'm pretty darn good at it now. They also got me 2 pairs of sun shields, these to cut down glare for artificial lighting, and these for bright sunlight. I knew how to use a computer already, but I didn't know about all the magnification and speech software there is for the vision impaired. During my residential training, the adaptive technology manager showed Marie and me the latest technology and several different programs. I also know now about several agencies and organizations where I can get adaptive software at no cost. Since I'm on retirement income, that's good to know.
Jim's condition was not severe enough to require orientation and mobility training. A person with nearly total vision loss would require about 25 hours of individualized sessions by an O&M specialist with advanced training in actual public situations. The activity would also include several hours of calisthenics and walking. Skills such as safe street crossing, negotiating stairs and curbs, and utilizing public transportation would be learned, in addition to familiarization with new environments. Use of an animal guide would also be an important consideration, as would training in Braille. Both personal adjustment counseling and marital counseling were undertaken to help Jim and his family deal with his loss of vision. Counseling was a daily component of the team approach to his visual rehabilitation. In general, he handled his vision loss well. The most difficult part for him was dealing with the changed dynamics within his family and with problems of communication with his children. Gradually, his self-esteem and confidence in his ability to overcome his vision impairment greatly improved. During Jim's training, weekly team meetings were held with him and Marie in attendance. His progress was discussed, and program plans were reviewed. Direct lines of communication were constantly maintained between the Rehabilitation Center's staff, the state sponsoring agency, Jim, and his family. Low vision management was another important part of Jim's rehabilitation. This centered around two areas: modification of his environment and possible treatment options with low vision devices. For patients with mild vision loss, simple environmental modifications may be sufficient to perform daily living tasks. Patients like Jim, with moderate to severe visual loss, will also benefit from environmental modifications, but they also need low vision devices to help maximize their vision. Lighting is probably the most important aspect of the environment for a vision impaired person. It is also the easiest to modify. Four factors were taken into consideration when analyzing Jim's home: illumination, glare, contrast, and figure ground perception. Because of his vision impairment, Jim needed more light than normal. This was accomplished by increasing the number and power of the lamps and fixtures. For general lighting, floodlights and walkway lights were installed on the outside of the house. For near vision tasks, gooseneck and swing arm lamps with insulated reflector shades were placed at all workstations and reading chairs. Different types of bulbs, such as soft, white, and clear, were experimented with to decide which tints were more comfortable. Next, the rehabilitation therapist helped Jim to identify potential sources of glare in his home. In just a few hours, they found and eliminated many areas of so-called discomfort glare. With Marie's help and input, shades were added to windows on the sunny side of the house. Scatter rugs were secured to the polished wood floor in the dining room. And Jim made a line guide for reading magazines with glossy pages. He was encouraged to keep his brimmed hat and his tinted and polarized glasses handy for any other situations that might occur, either indoors or out. These items are also helpful for occasions when veiling glare makes seeing difficult. Veiling glare is caused by scattering of light within the eye itself, which can result from high-intensity headlights and reflections from the sun in environments over which Jim has no control. His retinal condition caused him to be photosensitive, even in lighting conditions that most people would consider to be normal. If his condition was such that his vision was even more seriously hampered by light, his specialist might have recommended soft contact lenses with central red or amber filters. As it stood, however, the changes recommended by the team went a long way toward improving his visual capabilities. Contrast makes it possible to differentiate an image from its background. It is very important to good vision. Jim's rehabilitation therapist found many ways to enhance the contrast of his surroundings, which proved to be very helpful to him. The changes they made in his home were simple but effective. They included installing faceplates of electrical switches and outlets in contrasting color to the wall, covering a glass-topped table with a dark-colored tablecloth, applying colored decals to a sliding glass door, laying a dark-colored bath mat over the edge of the tub, placing a dark rubber ball in the bathtub to help Jim see the water level, wrapping rings of bright tape around handles of pots, tools, and utensils, and applying white paint to the leading edge of the porch steps. Finally, the rehabilitation therapist had a look at Jim's woodshop. She found his project table to be a victim of figure ground or visual clutter. Simply put, it required organization so that he could find what he needed without being visually confused by a number of other objects. The therapist also recommended painting the tabletop a solid, non-glossy light color to make it even easier to locate parts and pieces. The therapist complimented Jim on already having his tools fairly well organized on pegboards, and smaller items such as nails and screws separated into drawers for easy identification. Magnification of both near and distant images can improve visual function in nearly all patients with central vision loss. Jim was amazed at the variety of low vision devices that could help him to maximize his sight. Back at the center, he was given hands-on experience with almost every kind of device imaginable. This included typical optical aids, such as prescription magnification or microscopic glasses, filters to reduce glare and increase contrast, hand and stand magnifiers, handheld and glasses-mounted telescopic systems, head-worn magnifiers, and electronic magnification such as closed-circuit televisions or CCTVs. Jim was also shown typical non-optical aids available from stores and catalogs, including bold-tipped pins, illumination devices, large print books and magazines, talking books, talking watches. He was especially impressed with a scanner that could be combined with computer software to read printed text aloud. Jim was computer literate, having used one for years in his teaching. He had no idea, however, that this kind of low vision technology was so easily available to him. As a result of rehabilitation, he eventually found the low vision devices most suitable to his needs. Then came careful training in the correct usage of the devices. The adaptive technology manager gave him large print instruction sheets to take home, and he was grateful that she didn't expect him to remember every detail. The purpose of low vision devices is to maximize sight. This is done through magnification for people who have central vision loss like Jim, and field expansion for people who have peripheral vision loss. A doctor who specializes in low vision knows about the different types of magnification and the circumstances in which each is used. The specialists at the center keep up on the latest technology, so Jim knew that he was receiving the best information and training available for his unique needs. In order to select the most appropriate low vision devices, the specialists had to identify exactly what tasks Jim wanted to accomplish, analyze his fine and gross motor skills to confirm his ability to operate the low vision devices, determine which of his eyes was dominant, determine whether he would do best with monocular or binocular vision, determine whether he could learn to enhance his vision in a new healthier area of his retina called the preferred retinal loci, or PRL, and finally, determine whether his need for higher than normal lighting levels would require illuminated magnifiers.
They figured out exactly what I need to see better and to live an almost normal life again. For close-up viewing, they gave me an illuminated handheld magnifier and a stand magnifier. For reading, which I thought I'd never get to do again, I got a basic tabletop CCTV. It has a magnification range that fits my acuity. That was good thinking. For my computer, I got large print, white on black labels for the keys. I got a scanner with screen reader software, a new 19-inch monitor, software that magnifies the screen and the cursor, and now that machine can even recognize my voice and type for me. As if that wasn't enough, my optometrist fitted me with prescription lenses just for using the computer, and they're tinted, especially to take care of eye strain. They gave me a little telescope for reading street signs, identifying people, and seeing the sights. It took some getting used to, but it's well worth it. There are all kinds of what they call non-optical devices, too. Marie and the kids went shopping for my birthday out of one of those catalogs, and I actually used everything I got. Even stuff I didn't know I needed, like this talking watch. And a gadget that actually tells me when my cup is getting full so I don't pour coffee all over the table anymore. I can't wait till Christmas now.
Jim was fortunate to have an outstanding rehabilitation center near his home. The center offered comprehensive programs with teams of occupational therapists trained in visual rehabilitation, vocational rehabilitation counselors, vision rehabilitation therapists, orientation and mobility specialists, psychologists, and assistive technology computer specialists and other professionals as needs dictate. Such teams can be found in some university centers and large private clinics. Rehabilitation services may also be provided by not-for-profit organizations such as Lighthouse International, the Jewish Guild for the Blind in New York City, Alpha Point Association for the Blind in Kansas City, Missouri, the St. Louis Society for the Blind, and the Victors Program under the Veterans Administration is an excellent regional rehabilitation service for veterans. All state governments in the United States fund an agency to coordinate the visual rehabilitation of its vision-impaired citizens. They take care of most of the rehabilitative efforts, either directly or through subcontractors. Called either Rehabilitation Services for the Blind or Commissions for the Blind, these organizations can be found listed by state in the resources section of the MD Support website at www.mdsupport.org. In cases where a person might not meet the eligibility requirements of the state blindness agency, but the person's employment is being adversely affected, they can go for help to the state's vocational rehabilitation agency, also listed in the MD Support resources. How did Jim get the help he needed, and how was it paid for? The referral mechanism differs slightly with each state, but generally a referral can be requested by any individual, family, friend, eye care professional, rehabilitation specialist, or social worker. State statutes specify the minimum levels of vision loss for entry into the program, but there is also some flexibility in the acceptance standards. A doctor must provide documentation of the best corrected visual acuity and or the visual field in each of the patient's eyes. State agencies will usually cover the costs of rehabilitation for people who are registered. Those who have not qualified for government assistance might expect to pay their own expenses. Government agencies do the best they can with the limited funds available, and private or nonprofit organizations help to fill the gap. The task, however, is much larger than the current budgets and resources allow. Since his initial low vision assessment and training, Jim has greatly improved his skills for independent functioning. His social life has slowed somewhat, not so much because of his vision impairment, but because of his retirement from the school system. He and Marie still go out when their budget allows, and they enjoy the closeness and support of their active family.
Visual rehabilitation isn't easy, and it isn't a cure for blindness. It's an educational process that takes patience, practice, flexibility, and motivation. And it requires a team of professionals who know what they're doing and who care about you as an individual. The specialists and doctors at my rehab center were good, but they could only be as good as I would let them be. As I always told my students, if a person doesn't have a real reason to want to learn, a ton of self-motivation, then there isn't anyone who's going to be able to teach them. It was a long road, but I don't even want to think how long the rest of this road would be without the confidence and independence those people gave me. They gave me the tools, taught me how to use them, and showed me that my life can be just as good as it always was. Different, maybe. Not like I thought it was going to be, but it's good.